Welcome to the Bike Pack Adventures Podcast. I am your host, Chris Panaski. This podcast was created so as to share the stories of bike tours, bike packers, and endurance racers from around the world as they embark on amazing adventures. Through their stories, you'll be able to learn the ins and outs of bike travel. You'll get insight into various countries and cultures, hear fantastic stories of their journeys, and through both mine and my guests' experiences, you'll learn about the pros and cons of specific gear, bikes, and bike setups. If you're new to bike travel and considering going on an adventure, I hope the podcast provides you with that extra little bit of motivation to make it happen. The Bike Pack Adventures Podcast is proudly supported by Panorama Cycles, Redshift Sports, Tailfin Bikepacking Equipment, Montan Sports Canada, Race Day Fuel, and Brockton Cyclery. Their continued support allows me to focus my efforts on providing you amazing content. Now let's get rolling. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Bike Pack Adventures Podcast. I am here in my new podcasting room. Now, I think there's a bit of an echo still. I'm going to work on getting rid of that. I still have a few sound acoustic panels to build. I still have to install the door. And I'm willing to bet once that's done, this place will be way, way, way better sounding. I'm going to give today's episode a shot. I think it's probably got a bit too much echo, but I won't really know until I finish recording. Before I jump into today's little unpacking bikepacking episode, I thought I'd just tell you a little bit about what's been going on here. Obviously, maple syrup season is still going on, and it's been a really weird year. It's like 1 week producing syrup, the next week nothing, then producing, then nothing. And that's been happening since sometime in February. So yeah, really weird. But I like it because I can work on syrup for a week and then have a bit of a break and not stress things. What else has been up? Persian New Year happened a couple weeks ago, first day of spring. It was actually March 19th this year. And then just this past weekend, Easter weekend, was Nature Day, which is Sizda Bidar. Yeah, we had a little party with a whole bunch of friends over. It was really nice. A little bit of drinks, lots of food, tons of kids playing around. And yeah, that was kind of my Easter weekend because on Sunday, I took off on a little bikepacking overnighter, which I'll tell you about shortly. And that was it. I'm back to work. So yeah, if you're not aware, the Canadian Shield Bikepacking Summit is coming up on the weekend of May 24th to 26th at the Centre Vorlage in Wakefield, Quebec. If you're not sure what the summit is, well, I'll tell you a little bit about it. It's basically a weekend of group rides, camping, and some pretty amazing presentations by passionate bikepackers, industry specialists, and content creators with some amazing prizes donated by our fantastic sponsors, opportunities to get to make new friends within the bikepacking community while also sharing our passion and experience with those new to the sport. So it's going to be a really, really good weekend. I would love to see tons of people there. And yeah, it's going to be fun. Ontario and Quebec are pretty awesome places for bikepacking. So if you're not from the region, you should fly down and come join us. We have thousands and thousands of kilometers of gravel, trails, all that stuff. Maybe not the big mountain ranges of the West, but nonstop climbing for those of you that like pain. So yeah, a little bit more. So far, we've had two tickets donated to the BIPOC and LGBTQ plus communities, which has been really great. Hopefully we'll get a few more donated as there's been quite a bit of interest, and I would love to encourage new members to come to the summit, learn about the sport, and participate. We've also got about a dozen early bird tickets left for sale at $109, and then the price is going to go up to $139. So get your tickets now while they're still cheap. And yeah, soon I will release an episode exclusively on the upcoming summit, and that should drop within the next week or so. What else? On the bikepacking front, this weekend I got out with my buddy Serge for my first bikepacking overnighter of the year. In case you're not sure who Serge is, he's the uber skilled photographer that took some pretty amazing pics of my bikes a few months back. And we went out to ride the full Frontenac. It's a 200-kilometer route with a little bit over 2,000 meters of elevation gain. And as a first outside ride of the season, I kind of forgot what a toll it puts on the legs. And I was feeling pretty drained by the end of the first day. The roads were great. Lots of rolling hills in the Frontenac region. And as we were getting on, getting a little bit lazy and tired, Serge and I realized we could skip about 20 kilometers right on the northern section of the route and make it to camp just a little bit earlier where we could chill. And we kind of jumped on that opportunity. So rather than riding 125 kilometers the first day, we cut it to, it wasn't even 20 kilometers less, we cut it to about 110, with a little bit over 1,500 meters of elevation gain. So it was a lot of climbing. We camped on some crown land, made a small fire, enjoyed our respective meals, and then had a little bit of Chic-Choc's spiced rum. It's a Quebec-based rum. And basically then it was time to call it a night and get ready for day two. So second day, we had only 75 kilometers of riding to get through, and it was a lot quicker than the first day. Not really because we were all of a sudden massively stronger, but basically there was more downhill. Quite a bit more pavement than the first day, and a lot less climbing. So super nice route. If you've never ridden a full Frontenac, I highly recommend you go do it. It was really nice. It's not super long. It's an easy overnighter, or a little bit later in the season. You could probably do it in a whole day, in one day, if you're going to push hard and carry less stuff. We were loaded a lot more than we would be later in the year. It was quite cold out that night, and so we had a kind of warmer weather clothes and stuff with us. And, you know, that definitely slows you down and makes you bog down a bit and just tires you out more, right? So, lots of beautiful lakes along the road. I cannot imagine what it would be like in August when you could just jump in some of those. Super nice. And, some pretty sweet gravel and no winter maintenance roads were, as always, fun to crush. So 75 kilometers, 675 meters of elevation gain, and we're pretty much back of the car heading home to our respective families. So thanks again, Serge, for inviting me along or for letting me invite myself. And that is that. If you guys enjoy the podcast and you're in a position to contribute to its continued growth, I'd really appreciate you considering to join as a Patreon supporter, which you can do by going to patreon.com/bikepackadventures. Obviously, your continued support is what helps keep this podcast going. And by becoming a Patreon, you get early access to every podcast episode and also get to hear everything we talk about when we were off the map, essentially access to uncut versions of the episodes, giving you the opportunity to hear what we talk about before and after it's recorded. So I hope you enjoy it. And if you have any comments, queries, questions, you can reach out at chris@bikepackadventures.ca. Talk to you guys soon. Bye-bye. Before getting rolling into this episode, I'd like to thank one of our key sponsors. Panorama Cycles is dedicated to backcountry cyclists that prefer gravel, snow, and off-road trails. They believe cycling is a catalyst for adventures of all sizes and that there's no need to travel across the world or to be a seasoned athlete to live epic outdoor adventures. Panorama Cycles has some exciting things going on this year. The recently released Torngat Ti is the first titanium fat bike to offer two crankset spindle length setups to suit all types of riding. A versatile model, both lightweight and durable, that can be used for a wide range of adventures, making it the perfect bike for both trail riding and expeditions during summer and winter. The Torngat Ti is ready to tackle any terrain without compromise. For the 2023-24 winter season, Panorama Cycles is offering the Try Before You Buy program, allowing you to try out the Chic-Choc's carbon fiber fat bike before buying. There is no other program like this. Check out panoramacycles.com for details. Lastly, don't forget to use the promo code BPA10 on any new bike purchase to save 10% at checkout. Now back to the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Bike Pack Adventures podcast. In this episode of Unpacking Bikepacking, I'm going to be diving into strategies and things you can do to make your gravel bike the perfect bikepacking rig. Now, usually the Unpacking Bikepacking series is a segment where I share my thoughts and insights into various bikepacking related subjects, a bit about my personal journey and stuff. But today I'm going to kind of focus on improving your gravel bike as well as share my own personal experiences, what I've done, what I plan to do. So hope you guys like it. If you do, shoot me a message. Let me know what you thought about it. Anyways, Yeah, I think making 2024 the best bike best bikepacking season possible. One of the ways you can do that is to make some upgrades to your gravel bike. Now, the reason I suggest this as a thing to do is because a lot of people have gravel bikes and a lot of people are getting into bikepacking, but there's also a ton of routes out there where you're like, man, this is pretty rough. It's beating my body down. Should I invest in a drop bar mountain bike? Should I invest in a new mountain bike and build it up rigid or with suspension to eat up some of that, whatever, the rocks, the beat, you know, save your body from getting beaten up as much? And it's not necessarily important to do that. You might be able to just make some small changes to your gravel bike to make it even better at bikepacking, or for bikepacking, I should say. So I've put together a list of things that I think are suitable, or things you should consider when you're bikepacking, especially if you're using a gravel bike. First of which is the Redshift shock stop stem. If you've never heard of this, you've got to check it out. It's a stem that uses elastomers to provide a little bit of suspension. So they provide 20 mils of travel. Obviously, it's adjustable based on your weight, so you can switch out the elastomers. I mean, it means you have to take it all apart, but your body weight doesn't change that fast. So it's probably something you'll change once a season, if that. And it's designed to eat up a lot of the road vibrations and bumps out there on the roads, whether it's potholes, if you're riding like a no winter maintenance or unserviced gravel roads, that kind of thing. I first started using a Redshift shock stop stem in 2020 when I rode across a good chunk of Canada. It came stock on my bike and I was right away like, this thing is awesome. But a year later, I reached out to Redshift and they started sponsoring the podcast. And so I've been using their products ever since. And the odd time where I have got out on the bike without the stem mounted, for example, I was building up a new bike and I had taken off the stem too. While I was waiting another stem, I took a stem off my gravel bike, threw it on the mountain bike. It's a rigid mountain bike at the time. And then I happened to go for a ride. How did it work? No, I did have a stem. Anyways, I was waiting for another Redshift stem. That's what it was. Anyways, I went for a ride without the Redshift shock stop stem. And on this 160 kilometer ride, I was absolutely terrorized by the amount of bumps and stuff that I had just taken for granted that they didn't exist because I've been riding the Redshift so long. So, highly recommended. It does weigh more. It comes in at around 256 grams for the, I think it's 100 millimeter length stem. And, or maybe it's 256 on the 80. Anyways, it's about double the weight of a standard stem, just to give you some perspective. It's also quite a bit more expensive, coming in at around $270 Canadian. I think it was around $180 US. And they also make a pro stem that cuts off another 35, 36 grams using titanium mounting hardware. And I think the stem cap is cut out. So, but it's significantly more expensive at like $355. I've never used one, but I'm sure it's more or less the same thing. And probably the only people that would really need it is somebody who's racing at the pointy end of the race consistently. Anyways, I love the Redshift stem. It's not on every one of my bikes, but if I could have it on every one of my bikes, it would be. So check it out. And if you happen to use the promo code BPA15, you'll save 15%. And it'll keep me in the good graces of Redshift. All right, next thing up. Now, I realize it's a big jump in price when you go into suspension forks. But one thing that's been noticed in bikepacking recently is more and more people are moving over to using front suspension. Even on things like the Tour Divide, which is super, super long, people are realizing that front suspension saves your body a lot of beating. although it has a bit of a weight penalty, it's still it's very, very much worthwhile. I was riding a rigid mountain bike for bikepacking, and I found that after about 2 days of hard riding, especially if like the routes I've designed that have a lot of single track, I was feeling really, really beat up all through the shoulders, the arms, the wrists particularly, and even a little bit in the neck. So the year, 1 year ago, I put on suspension on my Panorama Taiga mountain bike for bikepacking as well. And a huge difference right away. I'm like, man, I can't believe I've been going like a year with a rigid front fork. And apparently a lot of people are doing this as well with Tour Divide and stuff. People are throwing on suspension. They're going with a little squish, as we call it. Now, the same can be done for a gravel bike. And it's something I'm not currently doing, but I'm very much considering. So I'm going to take you through, I'm going to talk about this one a little bit longer because I spent a bit of time researching it and checking it out because I'm interested and I'm shopping, trying to figure out what would be good for me. The first of which is the Lauf Grit carbon fork, 30 mils travel. For those of you that don't know the Lauf or Lauf, I think that's how you say it. It's basically got no oils, seals, things like that, in that sense, moving parts. It's a fork that's designed with some carbon fiber blades that very much similar to the elastomers. They provide flexion, and that is where your suspension is. So it's 30 mils. The downside of the Lauf is it only provides up to 45 millimeter tires, or 45C, if you're wondering. The downside, I think, there is if you're going to be investing into being able to get suspension, probably the reason you want suspension is to make your rides a bit more comfortable. And one of the simplest ways to do that is to have slightly bigger tires on your bike. So by putting on this Lauf Grit fork, you've kind of limited yourself to 45 mils, which is 1.8 inches or something like that. And it's pricey. It's $990. So it's expensive, but the weight is as low as you're going to get. There's nothing lighter in terms of suspension other than the Redshift stem. But it is expensive. The next one I'm going to talk about is the Fox 32 taper cast. Now, the reason I decided to talk about the Fox next is because I use a Fox Factory 34 on my mountain bike packing rig and absolutely love it. It's not as light as the RockShox, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But from what my buddy Carl said is it can be serviced more easily. So I'm not 100% sure about this stuff, but I believe for a lot of shocks, if you're going to service them, you got to just basically change the entire guts or something like that. Whereas the Fox, you can just change pieces and parts and stuff and just the individual seals and whatnot. I might be wrong. But anyways, something like that. Anyways, I really love the Fox 34. So Fox 32 is right up there on my thought list. It could be set up for 40 or 50 mils of travel. Now, if you remember, I said the Lauf weighed 850 grams. This one weighs 1,265 grams. So nearly 30% more. It does allow for 50 millimeter max tire size, which is 2 inches. So that's good. That's a good tire size on a gravel bike. I mean, that's more than good. And it's $950. So it's also expensive, but it's Fox. They're known. They make a good product. There's a lot to be said. And this is one I'm really, really considering. So anyways, I do hope to hear back from people with their own personal thoughts. The next one is the RockShox Rudy Explore. It allows up to 50C clearance as well. It's 1,250 grams, so 15 grams lighter than the Fox 32, although that's really not that much of weight saving, so I wouldn't pin anything on that. But it is $100 cheaper. It comes in at $850 and provides 30 or 40 mils of travel. So not quite as much as the Fox, but At the same time, it's probably a legitimate amount of travel for something like a gravel bike. And I added two other ones to this list. The KS GTC, it comes in at 1,385 grams, 40 mils of travel, 50C compatibility. I don't know too much about it, but I do know it's $600 US, and seem to have good reviews. So who knows? Check it out though, GTC. And then the last one is MPR Baxter. I believe it's British. I might be wrong. Comes in at 40 or 60 mils of travel with 45C clearance on the 40 mil version and 50 mil clearance on when it's, or not version, but when it's set up for 60 mils. So, but if you're running 2.7 or 27.5 tires, you can fit 2.4 inch tires inside this thing. So, sorry, 27.5 wheels, you can fit 2.4 inch tires, which is huge for a gravel bike. It's basically mountain bike wheels. And one really cool thing about the MPR Baxter is they have 16 color options. Now, I know a lot of people like to really make their bikes personalized and stuff, and this could be a really cool way to do it because they have 16 colors. That's insane. It does weigh 1,420 grams. It is the heaviest fork in the list and comes in at 950 pounds British. So, yeah, like probably $900, $950 US. So it's not cheap. So check it out. Hey, so I should add that I've done some pretty serious gravel biking with my old Opus Horizons gravel bike, having set FKTs on the BT700 and the Log Driver's Waltz. And one of my big takeaways is that the smaller gravel tires really, really punish your body. So I think the suspension's a great idea. I used a Redshift shock stop stem and that helped somewhat, but after, you know, 50 hours plus, almost 60 hours with sleep deprivation and hitting tons and tons of roots and rocks and stuff on single track, I still think that the best upgrade you can do in this case is to put on real suspension forks. So just my two cents. However, I should add that I haven't put that on my bike yet, but it's just because of the financial aspect and not for lack of desire. So yeah, the next thing on the list of things that can make your standard gravel bike into the ultimate bikepacking rig is handlebars. I remember when I got my original gravel bike, which was the Opus Horizon Carbon Black, and it was a really, really well set up bike. Came with the shock stop stem, which I've already told you I loved. It had a GRX 8, 10 or 12 or whatever the group set's called for 2x10, 2x11. But the one thing that was really lacking on it was the handlebars. The handlebars were 40 centimeters wide, often denoted in mils, so 400s. They had very little flare, not much back sweep, not like none of the things you really want in a set of handlebars that you're going to be taking off-road. So I was pretty limited. I rode that thing with those handlebars probably a good 15,000 kilometers over a year, no, maybe less, maybe 10,000 over that year. And then the very next year, I upgraded to some handlebars that are gravel oriented. The ones I got were the Redshift kitchen sink gravel handlebar system. But the large part reason for that is they sponsored the podcast and let me try out a whole bunch of stuff. But I got to say, I do love the handlebars. I've gone to other handlebars briefly and always come back. I wish they had a carbon fiber version, but that is not an option yet. Maybe one day. But their alloy bars are not much heavier. And the only downside with alloy I find is on colder days, your hands get colder easier. But for the most part, they do the trick. So anyways, the thing that's great about gravel handlebars is they tend to come in wider widths. They come, does that even make sense? They tend to be wider than your standard more narrow handlebars. Now a lot of bikes do come with wider handlebars, so you might be already set up. And to give you a sense of that, I had 44 centimeter bars is what I upgraded to, I should say. Now the thing that's nice about 44 centimeters bars, that's across the hoods. And when you go down onto the flared part of the drop bar, it gets wider significantly. So like a 44 is probably hard to say exactly, but maybe like 48, 49. So something like that. centimeters wide, which gives you much greater control if you're doing something technical, like going downhill or riding some like rough rock garden type stuff or whatever, where you got to maintain your balance. So to give you a little idea about what makes a gravel handlebar special is they tend to have flared bottoms. So that's like if you go into the drops, they flare out. And that allows you to, like I just said, maintain control better when it's rougher. They also tend to have a little bit of back sweep. And back sweep is if you're on the tops, so that's like closer to the stem, they tend to angle back a little bit more. So for instance, the kitchen sink gravel handlebars are 7 degrees back sweep, 25 degrees flare. So that back sweep just kind of lets your wrists have a little bit better and more natural position. It's not a huge amount, but it's noticeable. Another really cool thing is gravel handlebars tend to have a more compact, the drops tend to be a little bit more compact, not as long as like on a road bike, so that you're not getting quite as low. You're just getting the benefit of being wider without really dropping the body. And as I mentioned, they make them in various widths. And right now on my gravel bike, I have a set of 53 centimeter wide kitchen sink handlebars. With the loop, the loop is a little extension right in the middle that basically kind of acts a little bit like aero bars, but I've also got the bag with the Garmin mount, which I really like there. So mainly I don't really use it like aero bars. I more use it as a place to store some snacks and look at my Garmin from. I'm not sure I actually love the loop in the sense that if I'm going to ride something where I need to get aero or be long time on the bike, I'd probably put on my aero bars, but at the same time, it doesn't weigh much and it's not really in the way, so whatever. So anyways, there's a ton of brands of gravel handlebars. I'm just talking about the ones I've been using, the ones I know. By all means, shop around, find what you like. Everybody has a different preference. Last thing I'll add with the kitchen sink ones is they have a 20 millimeter rise. And that means from where you clamp them, they rise up. So they basically allow your body to be a little less tucked. So rather than dropping you down so much, they raise you up a little bit. And if you're like me and losing core strength as you get older and getting stiffer everywhere, getting a little bit higher is quite nice. So just something to keep an eye on. Recently, actually, Redshift just came out with the top shelf handlebar, and it actually rises up like 5 centimeters. So just a little bit more than the kitchen sink. And it's got a straight across shelf, so you can actually mount all kinds of accessories and stuff. It's pretty neat. Haven't tried it yet, but check it out on their website. So that is handlebars. The next thing on my list is adding comfort to your handlebar system. And with this, I am talking about the Redshift top and drop grips, the cruise control drop bar grips. I've also been using these since 2021, and I know a ton of people that are using them on their gravel bikes now. They are super, super comfortable. Basically, what they do is you strip your handlebars down, so you take all the tape off and everything. You don't have to take the shifters off. And you can add on these grips that basically just widen out parts of your handlebars to make them comfier. Like they add like a little ledge for your hands to rest on, whether you're on the drops or on the tops. So super nice, super comfy. I use them on every single one of my drop bar handlebars. They're not cheap, but one set will last you a long time. They cost about $100 Canadian, cheaper in the US. I don't know what they cost there. But if you go to redshiftsports.com and use the code BPA15, you can save 15%, which is your tax. So that's fantastic. But yeah, I mean, everybody I know has started adding these to their bikes because they're all just blown away at how comfy they are. So check them out. They add a lot of comfort. So following up on that is to make a good bikepacking rig is you're going to need a good lighting system. Now, there are two real ways you can go about this. The first one is to go fully automated into a dynamo system, but that does require you to, for the most part, change your front hub on your bike. The most popular dynamo out there is Son, S-O-N. I have the Deluxe on my gravel bike and SP Shutter Precision or something like that. SP8 is the dynamo I think I have on my mountain bike. But the Son is actually like the cat's ass. It produces power at really low turning speed and does a really good job of charging things and lighting up the world. Now, when it comes to lighting, there's definitely lots of brands out there. I've been using K-Lite from Australia, and that just happens to be because I got them from a friend who was selling his, and it's what I could afford at the time. But there's definitely some brand, lots of brands out there. I think Son makes their own lighting systems as well. And yeah, there's a bunch. Now, the downside of a dynamo lighting system, because it's not perfect, and I've come across this quite a few times, the downside for me is I do a lot of bike packing that takes me into really rugged territory with lots of climbing. And the dynamo, more often than not, is not producing enough light when I'm going uphill. It's casting, you know, it's dull. It's not getting, I'm not at speed. And so a lot of the rocks are casting shadows and stuff, and it's really hard to climb. So in those cases, I definitely need a secondary light. And actually, as of this year, I've got the dynamo lighting on my bike, my gravel bike, I should say, because I also have a mountain bike bikepacking rig. And for that one, I'm using battery powered lights. And I'm at the moment, I'm using Magic Shine Montier 6500. It produces a ton of light. It's got a 10,000 milliamp battery that you can also use as secondary power to charge something. I so far love it. I've only used it a couple times. The longest event was the Wendigo Fat Bike Ultra, and I had that thing on blinking mode for the entire day. And at night, I put it on eco because it was winter and there's snow out, and you didn't need a bunch of light to be able to see everything. And it was also full moon, so that really helped. But on eco mode, that light gets something crazy like 60 hours of battery or of light. Yeah, that's a lot of nights of riding. So pretty stoked with that light. Going to test it out more this summer and see how it goes. But that's kind of your two options. You're either plugged in with batteries, or you're using a dynamo. I know a lot of people that combine them with the dynamo and then a headlamp on their helmet that they can use also just to as a more direct spot. So when they're climbing at night, or, you know, they can just turn that on and get that extra power. So yeah, that kind of covers that up. I actually should talk a little bit about power banks. I've seen a lot of people have different ideas and methods about going out with power banks. I always carry one, if not two. And the reason I carry two smaller power banks, sometimes I carry a 10,000 and a 5,000. Sometimes I carry two 10,000s. I do know people that travel with 20,000 milliamp power banks or even bigger, but those tend to be people who are bike touring and they don't mind sitting at a store for 6 hours or whatever it takes to charge that thing up, or a restaurant or Tim Hortons or whatever. I like to have a couple 10,000s. That way I also carry a adapter for the wall that they're both pretty high power at like 35 watts or 50 watts, whatever they are, 40 watts, I don't remember. And it can charge them simultaneously at a pretty high rate. And rather than watch one thing charge for twice as long, I can charge two at the same time at a fast pace. So that's what I've been opting for. Not sure if anybody else has any input on that, but definitely I'd love to hear comments and on that one. Before continuing on with the show, I'd like to thank some of the show's sponsors for supporting the podcast. Redshift Sports was founded in 2013 by a team of mechanical engineers who also happen to be avid cyclists. From the beginning, they focused on taking a different approach to product development, drawing on their experiences and needs to create components that make a meaningful difference to the riding experience. The highly popular ShockStop suspension system smooths out road imperfections, reduces fatigue and strain. You can check them out at redshiftsports.com. Tailfin Cycling, designer of technical bikepacking equipment, has been creating waves in the cycling community for several years, having stepped outside the conventional boundaries of bikepacking equipment to find unique solutions that make the adventure all the better. Whether an endurance racer, bike tour, or bikepacker, these bags offer solutions for everyone. From their unique rear rack with quick release mechanism to their ingenious locking mechanism on the panniers that provide a rattle-free bikepacking experience. Tailfin continues to push the envelope. I'm extremely pleased to be part of the R&D division of Tailfin, to represent them on all my adventures and to have them supporting the podcast. Now back to the show. Another thing you could do to make your gravel bike even more badass for bikepacking is to get an Ass Saver mud guard. Now the Ass Savers, I love the name, such a Scandinavian thing. It was, I think it's Swedish. Anyways, I've used one before. I used to have the one that clips up under your seat. Works fairly well. I mean, it does its job. It keeps your butt dry. But they've recently come out with a new one called the Win Wing. think they could have done a better name with it, but whatever. The Windwing Gravel Mudguard. I believe it will fit up to 50 millimeter tires. I've got 2.25s on my mountain bike. I've put it on and it was really close and it was kind of hard to fit to find the right spot for it. So probably meant for like 50 mils. But it works really well. So it's the good thing about it is super cheap. I think it was like 25 pounds. So that's like $25 US-ish. It's very lightweight. It's easy to mount and take on and off. But it doesn't provide as much protection from the elements as like an all-around mudguard will. But at the same time, is regular mudguards are quite bulky and not necessarily suitable for your gravel bike. So the Windwing works really well for that. Yeah, and regular mudguards are kind of expensive. So this thing comes in really cheap. But it only protects you really from like your knees and up. So a lot of the splash coming down low near the bottom bracket is going to still splash on your legs and stuff. But everything going up higher, if you got it aimed right, is pretty easy to keep you dry. And you can also fine tune the positioning. So whether you move it up or down, your seat stays. It's got like 0 degrees plus minus 10 degrees. So you can kind of angle the Windwing up or down, lower profile to the tire or a little bit higher. It's up to you. So yeah, I've been using that for about a year on my gravel bike. And I got to say, it works pretty well. I often keep it set up there. One thing about it, though, is that the where it mounts on your seat stays, it can lead to scratching because mud and shit gets up there. And that's not a good thing. So what I did is I put some, I don't know, like frame rub protection stickers on there, but I don't know, not sure how well they're staying. So maybe just wrap a little bit of electrical tape and then stick it on. You should be good to go. So yeah, number four, another big thing you can do to make your gravel bike more rugged and bike packing worthy is to figure out some stuff with regards to puncture protection. So I've never used tire inserts, not for the lack of wanting to. It's just that I'm going to search them up right now as we speak. Yeah, so not because I've never wanted to. It's just I didn't have money to spend on one more thing. So they are pretty awesome in the sense that they'll keep you from getting pinch flats. They allow you to run lower PSI because now you're not going to slam onto the rim when you hit a rock or something. And, I just lost my spot. It just rolled up on me. Yeah, so they protect your rims from damage. They minimize pinch flats. They also provide sidewall support, so a little bit less chance of burping the tire off the rim, which is kind of cool because if you've ever gone lower PSI on your tires, you all of a sudden realize like, wow, I'm so much more comfy and I'm not necessarily slower. So, and then I even read one thing online where they said in the event that you get a sidewall tear, you could even limp your ride home because it'll provide just enough support that you can actually ride the bike. Definitely not a long-term solution, but maybe enough to get to a bike shop or something, right? Or to somewhere where you can call for help. On the same note of, I was going to say for tire inserts, there's a few different brands out there. There's like, even Victoria makes the Airliner. Cushcore is the pretty much known brand. Tanis Armor is another one. So yeah, there's several different brands of these things. And they all range in like the $100 to $200 price tag. So they're not cheap. And I think you've got to be running tubeless to use them. So if you're not running tubeless, that is my next thing I'm going to talk about. If you're not already running tubeless, that is your next thing. You've got to set your bike up tubeless. I mean, you don't have to. Do whatever you want. But ever since I converted my bikes tubeless, I can't imagine going back to riding with tubes. I mean, I've had incidents where I've had to put tubes in the tires because of punctures and stuff and not having any more CO2 cartridges or it's leaking air and I can't get a stop. But for the most part, I get zero flats a year, maybe one. knock on wood, because God knows now I'm going to get like 10 this year. But yeah, I've been riding tubeless for 3 or 4 years now, which is not the longest time. I know people have been doing it for a decade, and I would never go back. So, and then, yeah, it makes your life just so much better. You can run lower PSI, if that's one thing you're wondering about. What are the advantages running lower PSI? More resistant to punctures, because when you get, you know, you have to have tire sealant in the tires, if you don't know that. But if you get a little puncture, it can automatically self-seal, so it saves you the trouble of having to patch a tube or change a tube, repump a tire, take everything on and off it, you know? So it's a really big pain. But tubeless tires fixes and solves a lot of those problems. On that same note, tubeless setup, as I mentioned, repair tool. You're going to need a repair tool. I've never had to use one yet. Well, that's a lie. One time I had to use one, but luckily my buddy Carl's there and he's a mechanic. And he was like, I got this. Done. And he was using Dynaplug, which is what I bought. I used to use the regular bacon strips, kind of like they use for car tires. I heard so much good things about the Dynaplug, so I went out and got that. And the Dynaplug is basically kind of like a little bacon strip, but on the end of it is a little cone of metal that you ram into the hole on your bike tire. And when you pull back, the little metal cone kind of catches inside the tube, and you've now plugged your tire. Somehow, that little metal thing never really damages or bothers anything else, so that's cool. It's still recommended you... I think you need to do something about it later. You should probably figure out how to patch. I don't know. But and then there's also Stan's darts. They make this thing called the dart, and it kind of looks like a feather. It's all these little strips of rubber, and it's made to react with their tire sealant. And apparently they work really well, but they're quite pricey. So I've never tested one. I've never bought one. That is it. Following up on the puncture protection, running tubeless, getting a tire repair tool, a big volume pump. So you're going to need a pump, because these little pumps that you've been using when you're on the gravel bike, or, you know, like on a road bike, they're not going to cut it with higher volume tires. So you're going to want a pump that has a decent amount of air press. I like the 1UP Components EDC pump. I actually don't use one. I want one. My buddy has one, and when I used it, I was like, damn, this thing is awesome. He's got the 100cc version. They also make a slightly smaller 70cc, but he liked the bigger one because he could use it fat biking, mountain biking, gravel biking. He could just take it everywhere with him. What else? Converting to a one-by setup. Now, this is kind of an expensive... could be even more expensive than the suspension, but it's an expensive modification on your bike. But it seems to be more and more people are going to a one-by setup, not only because it's, for those of you that don't know, one-by setup means one chain ring in the front instead of two or three. A 1x11, 12, 13 now with Campagnolo, but typically 1x11 or 1x12. Is it gives you a really wide gear range. They make cassettes that are really big now, up to like 51 teeth and maybe even 52, I don't know. And you can climb some really massive hills with that. And the one by setup reduces the chances or it limits the amount of things that can break, because you no longer have a front derailleur, you no longer have a cable, you no longer have a shifter. A lot of these things that could possibly break are removed from the equation. So you've only got the rear derailleur, shifter, cable to worry about. So it's good. However, it can be really expensive. Like an 1151 or whatever cassette, it's expensive. It's a couple $100 or more. I don't even know. I forget. But, you know, so that is something to consider, is the cost of investing into making a one-by setup. Something else that I'd like to talk about is dropper posts. Let's say rear suspension. I actually know a lot of people are now moving on to XC bikes that have full suspension for bike packing and stuff, just so they have that ability to really ride some gnarly stuff and not feel completely beat up. But the vast majority won't be, and that's basically having to buy a whole new bike. So we're not going to talk about full suspension, but there are a few options. One is a suspension seat post, like the Redshift Shock Stop seat post. There's a couple other companies that make them. Man, they were in my head yesterday. Oh, what are they? Anyways, they're out there. I'm not ignoring them because I'm sponsored by Redshift. I just don't remember who they are. It'll probably come to me in a minute. Anyways, one thing I like about the Redshift suspension seat post that I've been using is it gives you 30 mils of suspension. It's adjustable to your weight. So it's not elastomers. It's a spring system. The elastomers are on the Pro seat post actually. And, I don't like them as much, but it's great if you're a road bike rider that likes to ride some gravel. But if you're a gravel rider that likes to hit some trails and roots and rocks and all that stuff, then I recommend the regular one that's spring tension, cause you can adjust it to your weight. And, yeah, the only downside about the Redshift seat post is you can't drop it like a dropper post. And the problem with that is it keeps your center of gravity really high up on the bike. So if you're going down a pretty steep or gnarly trail, you lose some of that balance that you might otherwise have if you could drop your weight. So I never knew much about dropper posts until the last year when I got sponsored by Panorama and started using dropper posts on my bikes. But it's been pretty phenomenal. Like I have to really like, I can't believe I rode without dropper posts. However, they're expensive and, well, not necessarily more expensive than suspension seat post, just different. My gravel bike has suspension seat post, my mountain bike, my fat bike have dropper posts. And now that I'm getting used to them, I'm really liking the dropper post. So that's the next thing. The good thing about dropper posts is they lower the center of gravity. So when you're going down something that's a little bit gnarlier, your weight's down, you have better traction, your weight's a little bit more over the back wheel, and it just helps you grip and have better control. And I remember in the BT700 in 2021, I was riding my gravel bike, and there were some really, really crazy downhills that people were shocked to see me going down on a gravel bike, especially at the speed it's going. Had I had a dropper post on that bike, I would have been really comfortable. But at the time I was quite nervous and, luckily I didn't crash, but I easily could have. So the dropper post will actually improve your, what's the word I'm looking for? Your confidence, I guess. Yeah. It'll improve your confidence going downhill because you'll feel more in control, which is a really big part of it, especially if you're not a really experienced mountain biker. That's something that's going to make a drastic improvement and you're going to notice it immediately. A couple other things, I guess, that you could consider. They're not really related to improving your gravel bike. However, getting a good navigation system is really clutch to having a good bike packing experience. You can use your phone. So don't get me wrong. Ride with GPS is awesome. You know, it costs about, I'm not sure if it's US or Canadian dollars, but $80 a year for a subscription. It allows you to run the routes offline. You can download them. It'll give you turn by turn navigation. So even if the screen's off, it'll flash on or whatever and tell you. I very rarely use my ride with GPS to navigate when I'm biking because I have a Garmin. So that is the other thing. Getting a device like a Garmin or a Wahoo or a Karoo, sometimes you can get some really good sales on. So if you don't have one, maybe wait for a sale. Black Friday, things like that, super good time. Using a Garmin 530. So even mine's already like 4 years old and they were already older than that when they came out. So I think it's been around for at least half a decade. I would like to upgrade to an 840 because it's touchscreen. It's a little bit bigger. It's a little bit newer, a little bit faster. I've heard that it reroutes better or picks up your route faster. One of the problems with the 530 I had is if I went off the route, it would try to reroute me, but it would take like 5 minutes. So I'd have to be sitting there watching and waiting and going, come on, man, get back on route. You know, and when you're bikepacking, you don't have time to waste like that every time you stop, you know, or every time you make a little mistake. The Wahoo Element Roam, my buddy was using it, and he changed to the fanciest Garmin because he didn't like that the Element would freeze up sometimes if the file had been running for too long. So after about 24 hours, 36 hours, something like that, it froze on him and he lost everything that was on there. So that was kind of a game changer for him. But if you can get a hold of a, oh, and I know some people that use like eTrex 20X or whatever it's called. And it's just a navigation device that kind of makes a cookie crumb and or cookie trail or what do you call it? And they love it. They love it as a first line of navigation because the batteries last forever. I think they use double A's and you can just change them up. And then they have their other devices as a backup when bikepack racing. And the last thing I'm going to talk about, which is, again, nothing to do with your gravel bike, but everything to do with riding comfortably, and that is cargo shorts or cargo bib shorts, whatever you use. I love them because you can fit a ton of stuff in your pockets. Sometimes I just keep my phone on my thigh so it doesn't fall out and I can feel it there. And if I need to grab it, it's right there. Super easy, accessible. There's also pockets on the back part if you're using a bib. And it frees you up from the need to wear a jersey. So if you've, you know, like jerseys are tight, they're constrictive. If you're bikepacking, you're typically not racing to the point where like a little bit of a flapping shirt is going to make you win or lose something. And yeah, so why not be a little more comfortable? Wear a normal shirt. And yeah, that's why I like it. Another thing, you don't have to buy $400 bib shorts. There's lots of brands that sell great cargo bib shorts for like $100. I think Montu sells some. Montonsports.ca, they sell some. That's the ones I use. They're super comfy. I know there's lots of brands that are more affordable and not ridiculously expensive. And so, yeah, check it out. So anyways, yeah, that was kind of the gist of what I wanted to go over today. I've been making some personal thoughts along this line, so I thought I'd put this together. I do use a Redshift shock-stop stem. Actually, on my mountain bike packing rig, I use a shock, so like a suspension fork and the stem by Redshift. I feel like the weight is very minimal gains or losses. Like it's very little additional weight. However, it saves me. Like if I'm riding my bike and I hit some really gnarly like washboard and stuff, even with my shock locked out, I just kind of roll over it with the stem doing its work. It seems to be like they pair together really nicely. I am considering putting a suspension fork on my gravel bike. So I mean, it just has to do with a bit of money at the moment. We'll see what comes up, if I can manage to afford it. But that is a hope. I would like to try that. Same thing with the tire inserts. A lot of things I talked about are things I'm considering. Tire inserts, dropper post, things I'm considering for my gravel bike. However, personally, on my gravel bike, because I use aero bars, because I'm using aero bars on my gravel bike, I also, and a B17 Brooks saddle, I also used a dual position C-post by Redshift, which allows me to toggle it forward to be way more comfortable on the aero position. So I'm not 100% sure if moving to a dropper post is something I'm going to do on my gravel bike, because going on aero bars with the Brooks saddle is really uncomfortable for men, and probably women too, actually, but I don't know from my own personal experience, but for men definitely is. So I might stick to the dual position. I haven't figured that out yet. I would love to upgrade to the Garmin 840. It's on my wish list. And yeah, man, always. is it, everybody. I hope you guys enjoyed. I do want to quickly apologize for the quality. I know there's a bit of an echo. I can hear it. I finished editing. I've recorded this here after. I will continue to work on this room, try to put more stuff up to help minimize the bouncing around of sound waves, but could take some time. I really do want to start doing some interviews again, but I've been hesitant because I don't want to ruin it by having bad audio. So give me another week or two on that, and I'll get some podcasts out that are interviews. So cheers. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye. I want to end the show by thanking all my listeners once again for the emails and comments I regularly receive from you. It really helps motivate me and keep me going with this project and to continue sharing people's amazing stories. If you have any comments or questions, you can email me at chris@bikepackadventures.ca or go to bikepackadventures.ca and shoot me a message through the contact form. You can also check out the webpage for past podcast episodes, bikepacking routes throughout Canada, blog posts, videos, and touring tips. Lastly, I'd like to once again thank all the individuals and companies that are supporting the podcast. Head over to bikepackadventures.ca/partners for some amazing deals. If you're enjoying the show and would like to become a supporting member, head over to www.patreon.com/bikepackadventures to sign up. Patreons get to enjoy early access and ad-free podcast episodes. You can also support the show by sending a one-time donation through PayPal. This money all goes back into the podcast, helping me to cover the costs associated with running the show, buy new equipment when necessary, and continue to produce the high-quality content that you've become accustomed to. Much appreciated, and keep on pedaling.